So we have all the group. Let's see if internet works. Okay, it works. Okay. So let's do a very very quick. Yes. Let's do first of all, let's try to understand what's the structure, what's going on, okay? So you understand a little bit better. This morning, we will continue the lecture of yesterday. Yesterday, more or less, we arrive at the half, so we are doing it. So I think we take at least one break, or probably two breaks, because we arrive to 1 o'clock, right? So this is how we organize this. In the afternoon, I will lecture a little bit again, but I will lecture which are more operative things, okay? I will try to show you what you are actually doing from that point on in terms to create this chessboard that right now you don't understand what it is, this chessboard of Peter Eichmann. What does it mean and what you are going to do? I will explain this in the afternoon. Instead, Sunday morning, you already come to the class with some things that you are producing in the meantime, and with that, we talk and we have an exercise. That is the idea, okay? So we'll finish that this first part. Today, that is of course long and complex. In order to recap very, very quickly, so I'll put you back into shape, we are talking of Peter Eichmann, an architect that has around almost 80, it is already 80 or 81 of age, and he made a long path in the history of contemporary architecture, because it was operating from the 60s to today, so it's almost 50 years. Peter Eichmann is considered one of the relevant architects in the history of contemporary architecture, mainly because he's a very interesting combination of, let's say, some type of didactic approach, something that you can transmit to a certain extent, a logic of design, let's put it like that, and with also some important buildings. But the particularity of Peter Eichmann is the combination of the two, that there is a strong theoretical approach, all based on design. So it's really based on design. He has been a teacher and professor in many, many academic institutions around the world, but mainly in the United States, in Cooper Union, Princeton, Yale, and for many points of view, he's a kind of guiding figure of American architecture, and also a kind of hub of interest, of ideas, and also of academic power, of course. This is the person that we are talking about, and we are interested because out of his system of thinking architecture, we can extrapolate the techniques. This is what we are really interested in. We are in a context of design. We are not in the context of history or poor theory. We are in a context of design. I am a designer and you are in a master of design, right? Of architectural design. So what we are interested to understand is how he operates, basically. This is what at the end we are really interested. How he operates in order to understand from the way he operates a way of doing that in a way can be applied also to your roles. That is the whole idea. We are not here so much, although that is interesting, to understand the cultural, the historical, the contextual thing. We are really interested to understand how he operates, because that operation becomes something that could be used by you. So the whole idea is this one. It's like that we are discussing about a surgeon and how the surgeon operates, at the end we are not so much interested in all his philosophy, although they are important. But at the end we are really interested to understand the techniques of how he operates. So it's not very different as an approach. So I'm doing all this to put you in a framework that is also cultural, historical, and all that. But at the real end, what we are really interested in are the techniques, because otherwise we are not in a design context, in a design context. And my idea was that with a short workshop in 3 days, it's better to be concentrated on one personality and one technique, etc., instead of talking about, in general terms, about these issues. That's why each year I did a seminar different, but with the same structure. I did it with Terrani the first time. Anybody was with my workshop here in Polis with Terrani? No, it was too long ago. No, but you were? Only the lecture, okay. Yeah, because I remember some of your faces. Yes, and you. And then after I did it on Sauer. Somebody was on Sauer, you were on Sauer. So you know more or less what. So also when I mean the chessboard, you understand what I mean, and you can also a little bit explain to the other, because with that technique it's much faster. You give the right keywords and they understand what, okay? So this is what we are doing. Very briefly, just in order to warm up, yesterday we discussed, first of all, the moment of in which Eisman started to look at architecture. We understood that he looked at architecture through a very strong singularity, a very strong formal lens. He put just a formal lens on top of that. I explained the reason, the historical reason to do that. I explained his liaison with Terragni, particularly two very different works of Terragni that he inspired a thinking, an architectural thinking that was condensated, particularly in this work. Then we went through, we talked a little bit about the relationship with conceptual art and with the linguistic thoughts with people like Chomsky, etc. We are explaining that there is a system of self-accreditation and the kind of making the process explicit through which the design is born is a very important aspect of that kind of accreditation. We thought about the success of the New York Five, the idea to create a group to make a jump to another level. We said at a certain moment we start to be interested to the context, and the context becomes part of the game, of the architectural game. Then we talked about this phase of difficulty, in which not only personal but also historical, and the whole moment where the moment in which postmodernism as a memory, a popular memory kind of attitude, was just the opposite of what he was basically thinking. And so we discussed about this phase, I'm sure you remember. And then I started to show gradually how he started to develop new techniques that has to do with context, but in a very different way than the memorial, mimetic way. And I talked about this first project where certain ideas of layering were present. The layering, the maps, the overlaps of things, etc., the grid, all that. And then we talked about the word palimpsest that was here, how that became a technique to put together different things and kind of react to the context, but not in a linear way, but in a kind of more complex way. And then we talked briefly about Mr. Chumi. And I said that basically this relationship, in a way, it is really, certain things in life are funny, because in this particular area, really Eisman was a pioneer. You know, he really is The first one that really saw in a certain way these things, in a couple of phenomena, no? Not all, but in a couple, really, yes. And it is interesting and kind of ironic in a way that as many times happen, it's not that the pioneer, that one that got the success. It's somebody close to the pioneer, in a way. And both in this case and the case of this other and the concept of the in-between that we were discussing here, this idea, really they theorized the idea of the in-between, it became really particularly the fact that actually it did not make the major building. I hope the internet works. I want to show you very, very briefly these two Chumi things. If you go here and we ask Chumi La Villette. Okay. Ecco qua. Here it is. This is the Chumi La Villette project. And you see how even in the drawings is that there is that system of layering. That idea that the systems are independent one from the other, and you even see these red things that he called the poly, but the evidence and the relationship with this project, it is very, very, very evident. And if you look at this other project, also again by Mr. Mentor Chumi, because he's our friend. So Mentor Chumi not only did that, but did a real masterpiece that was based on the idea of the in-between, which is this project here. Okay. Siamo meglio, ma he's rather intelligent. Our friend Google. This project is a really fantastic project. It's really a masterpiece of modern architecture. And it is based exactly on the idea of the in-between. Look, the idea is, it's the same that one of Eisman, but moved vertically instead of horizontally. Normally, when you have a situation like this existing building in which to create a center of art, again, you do it close by or in other things. Instead, the idea, it was really to make in between. What is the idea? To overlap on the existing buildings a kind of a huge canopy. And basically, this huge canopy creates, you see here, a space in between the canopy on top, which is here, and the existing building. So the roof became a space that can be inhabited and then can be used in many different ways and create this kind of interior landscape that is very interesting. Probably in this case is not so direct the liaison with Peter Eisman thinking, but the idea of the in-between is really a very strong idea and very interesting. By the way, I discovered Unterwasser too to use this, but not this technique, another technique that I never thought, and I thought in this architecture, that will be interesting to remember. It's very simple, but very, very interesting. In many buildings that are done like that, it inhabits this place. So it creates in here, which is amazing, very simple, but very interesting. So you may have structures that they tend to inhabit here, which is really, again, these issues are important, because, well, you are in Albania, so you know how to work with in between pretty well. You are masters of it. Masters of the way to infill, fix, etc. But this type of attitude was not present in the, let's say, formal architecture. informally, you always invent these things, but not in the context of formal architecture. It's a completely different thing. But anyway, this is just to show you something that we discussed, and yesterday you have not seen. Okay, now let's go back to Eisman. So, we said that we also talked a little bit how the studio operates. I told you that it's more similar to a design studio than what you generally think as a professional studio. It's something that operates differently, more similar. And then I said that basically many of these projects are really based on a phase of research or on a phase of study. And it is very interesting to see how the studio operates in reality. For example, we have just done in Rome this workshop with Ben Van Berkel, with one of the young partners of Ben Van Berkel. And we've done a workshop with them for 3 or 4 hours that was with my PhD students. And the whole point is how they work, really how they work. And all their approach is based, telling very simply, on a process of hybridation. It's a constant hybridation of images, hybridation of concepts, that kind of pile up one on the other. With this process of hybridation, basically, putting together things that are different, in a way you come up with kind of, let's say, some sort of innovative image, innovative concept, and from that you create the diagram. More or less, that is the approach. So it's very interesting how things are done in reality and what are the techniques. So Peter Eisman in this phase was in a normal thing, a phase of study, a conceptualization of some issues that can be in a way applied, and then the phase of alternatives, and then progressive closing. So we talk about this project, we talk about this project. This is a interesting project also within the same type of phase, but it's also an interesting project. Again, here, what's going on is that there are some existing building on the site. The project is for an art museum, and there were some existing building on the site. Again, the technique, it is that one of studying the old maps and kind of putting the layers of the old map there. That kind of attitude brings an idea that is very important to understand, is that everything is design. This is a very important concept. Everything is design. You don't design an object. You design relationship among objects. And these relationships are kept together by these grids, basically. And these grids, in his approach, are coming from historical maps. But in reality, they can come everywhere. The grids are coming from historical maps is a kind of justification, per se. But in reality, they are rather arbitrary justification. But the difference is, when we saw a house 2, it was both, it was an object on a plateau, on a surface. When we saw house 10, there are the existing contour lines, within which a building fits, and then he finds some strategy to fit. But when we are here, we have another approach. It's the idea that you have a grid, in a way, that sign a certain aspect of the site, and everything is designed within that. Everything is designed. And then within that, you decide a certain geometry, certain things, and something is green, something is built, something is intermediate, something, there are actions within that, but everything is the dying. That is the difference, big difference. So you don't place an object on a plateau, you don't put a sculpture object in an existing landscape, but everything becomes design. So in the moment that everything becomes design, there is no conceptual difference between what is built, what is dream, what is past, and what is intermediate space. It doesn't matter, in a way. Everything is together. And in order to have everything together, that's why we need it in this approach. We needed to have the plans of the historical plan, because he was doing this, the Greek, the welcoming from the overlapping of this. As a justification, let's say, but in reality. But with this idea, he comes with the idea that all is designed, which is crucial to understand this approach, that became later known as a landform architecture. You can call it in many ways, but landform is one of the most good way to understand this. So once that you are here, with these kind of balances, actions, etc., and you look at the drawing, you feel that, right? Everything is based on a common system, and within that there are relationship, objects, pieces of landscape, existing things, etc. And some of them are coming from some type of memory. This is what he was telling. For example, this thing was coming from the fact that before this place was a ranch, whatever. No, was an extracting gasoline was taking out, no? There is a memory of excavation in that area. So he used again this technique, a little bit playing with the idea of icon, a little bit in this phase. So there is this icon, and the other one, there is another icon. He was playing a little bit in the middle of the 80s, because that was in the thing. So if you see this, you basically more or less understand what I was saying. So existing, new parts, etc., they are within that kind of general approach. And also, and then in this particular case, there is often in Peter Eisenman some structures that keep together, let's say some type of ordering principle that are almost always present in his architecture. In this case, it's this long kind of ramp that creates this kind of scalea, in a way, that organize the main axis, let's call it like that, within which all these other things may happen. So it's also rather, unfortunately this one was not this, but it was rather interesting and very didactic in order to show you the approach. Questions? No. Okay. Now, layered grids shouldn't be here. Layered grids, I will correct that. Layered grids will be before. Anyway. Here, from this image on, we made another jump, because the process is, in some way, you do each project as an intellectual exploration, right? The intellectual exploration brings to the results of the project. Some of these results are relevant for the project itself, but they don't become, let's say, a general rule, or they don't became a kind of a real principle. They are used there. That's fine. So, the concept of DNA, for example, that was used here, was successful, but then that was it. We did not pursue it. The idea of the Boolean mask, again, was typical of this one, then he did not pursue it. But there are other ideas instead that becomes very, very strong and create a kind of superior level logic, something that you keep. So clearly the idea of in between belongs to that level. And in the late 80s, another idea came on that is a really interesting idea, which is the idea of swinging or undulating in Italiano, no? The idea of swinging of undulating, which is a completely absurd idea if you think like this. What architecture should share with the concept of undulating, you have to tell me. The concept of undulating seems to belong to dance or to other disciplines. Just imagine to make Mr. Palladio and telling him we are making architecture based on undulating. And he said, yes, I understand, you are in the future. I cannot even conceive this five centuries after. How you can approach architecture to the undulating? You are out. We are five centuries after. You are not out. And many things have happened in the meantime. It is rather interesting this approach. In order to understand that, you have to understand that the concept of dynamics in architecture, to a certain extent, has been rather present in the architectural debate since the beginning of the other century. Through the whole avant-garde, could be impressionism first, then cubism, neoclassicism, etc., and the futurism particularly, the idea was that aesthetically, in order to respond to a society based on movement, the industrial society, is the society of the machine, is the society of the dynamic, in a way, architecture should basically be should have an aesthetic, let's say, that is fragmented and dynamic. So in some way should adhere to that world, to the world that is intrinsically dynamic. So if you see architecture that has been produced within that idea, with that idea, if we go to just to mention one, the first one, if we go to Antonio Santelia, for example, and we see already in this type of architecture at the beginning of the last century, the idea that architecture in a way contain object of movement, in a way. Contain bridges, contain elevators, contain a kind of dynamic. But it is, in some ways, the program of dynamic. Or, later on, it is an aesthetic feeling of dynamic. It is an aesthetic feeling of abstraction and dynamic, or instead of being the classical symmetrical builder. So the concept of dynamic, in some way, was present either because the architecture, in a way, presents in itself elements of dynamic, elevators, ramps, things, etc., etc., and in some way has incorporated into it things that are dynamics, or because in terms of an idea of an abstract language, a language of disassembling in a way, incorporate, let's say, a word that is fragmented, that is dynamic, that you cannot feel with the old category, okay? But what is happening here is something completely different. We are not emulating the fact that there are elevators in the building, and we are not emulating the idea that we are going with a fragmented language. We are trying to think a degenerating force that creates architecture, the syntax of creation that is intrinsically dynamic. So we are doing something different. We are not creating an architecture full of elevators in order to show the dynamics or to tell that it belongs to the industrial society. We are trying to find out a way to generate architecture that is intrinsically dynamic. Sì? È detto chiaramente? Più chiaramente di così. It's intrinsically dynamic. Okay. So, let's see what's happening now. This is not Peter Eisman again. This is Antonino Saggio that interprets Peter Eisman. There is no anything like that in any part of it. But then, in order to explain this concept, I had to say, look, at the time of Santeria, Santeria was an architect. And of course, being an architect, he used those images that you see. But close to him, there are also the painters, and there are also the sculptors. And as in many cases happen, conceptually, the painters or the sculptors are much more advanced in terms of intellectual thinking than the architect, for the simple reason that the architect has to deal with so many other issues, you know, functionality, tectonic, this and that, that is rare. Something happened that the architects were at the forefront. It happened, of course. If you imagine the whole history of the Renaissance, architecture were on the first front, and the painters came later, or they came together. So it's not always happened that, you know. Let's say they came together. Masaccio and Brunelleschi were really close friends, and they built this new paradigm together, okay? But in many other cases, generally it happens that the more free thinking allows to conceptualize more. It's the same thing that why mathematicians can create mental framework, then before being understood and used technologically, it may happen after 50 or 60 years. You know? So the mathematician creates certain type of structures that before being used by the, let's say, the physics, just to make an example, or even the technology, comes a lot of time, because they create a kind of mental structure that before being applied takes time. So in a way, it's not very, very different to certain things in other arts in relationship with architecture. So again, if we see Santeria, we'll do these things again. We'll do Santeria. Let's see what they show to us. Okay, you see all this work. You see all this work, right? It's what we said before. Now instead, let's see a person that was together belonging to the futuristic group as Antonio Santeria, but he was a painter. Okay, let's do what he was doing. Look, try to look. They were all kind of industrial building also, in a way. So also the program, in a way, was that one that evocates the world of industry. They were power plants, they were factories, even the program was like that. Let's look at this. Look. Same moment, friends one to the other. Let's look at what Giacomo Balla was doing. I don't see any factory. I don't see no direct reference to that. And so, in a way, it's conceptualized what dynamic forces could mean in their essence, not in their physical representation. He was writing the algorithm. He was writing the algorithm of dynamic forces. He was not making the program. He was writing the algorithm. Exactly as a mathematician was creating the mental structure through which 50 years after Einstein understood how certain rules of the universe work. Same thing. So he's kind of theorizing. And the most important theorem is this painting, which a factory, elevators, not at all, a little dog, and probably the end of a skirt of a signora. So, from a context, completely no relevance whatsoever. But this is an incredible manifesto at the same time, because it is the manifesto of the ondulation. Because try to understand, Balla is more advanced than Duchamp. Because Duchamp is thinking not the ondulation. Marcel Duchamp, if you look at this manifesto, we Italians, at the end, when we deal with art, we are very nationalistic. It's very difficult that you beat our ego when we deal with art, okay? So if you look at Marcel Duchamp, and you see his... if you look at this, this is, although a very important manifesto, is that immense strength, etc., but this is a kind of cinematographic idea. So there are and there are lots of experiments that have been done in the already at the end of starting 1860s, 1870s, the photographer that will start to do these things. You know, so it was something interesting that they were interested in this. This is a kind of cinematographic, therefore mechanic, approach, okay? In fact, this is the new descent and the scale, right? Not the scale. the stair, right? So it is that. Balla is a completely another level. He's not doing that. He was moving, this is the genialata, this idea. He's making an undulating movement, which is a completely different than a frame by frame, you understand that, right? And he was also doing another thing. If you are undulating, what is happening? And now is your turn. If I do frame by frame, you know, it's a kind of cinematographic effect. If you are undulating, what it happens? Very interesting what happens. Habib, where are you? Yes. Habib, look at the image. What is understand? What it happens? You can say in Albanese, the other are translating, because it doesn't mean that you have... There is a verb that is very interesting.
Movement.
Che ha detto? It's associated, yes. Sono tautologici, ripeto una cosa a volte. All right, so it's what I said, basically. No, let's make another jump. Understand, what is the question is, if you look this image and the other image, there is one effect, an effect that is very different from one to the other. Eh?
Hmm?
Exactly, there are no frames. There are no frames. That one is based on frame. And in fact, each part is sharp. And here, it's blurring. It is blurring, is the word. Fuma is blurred. The image is not sharp, it's blurred. So, in a way, we can say that that is a digital creation of an image, while the other one is a cinematographic. Because technically, as you know, but this is very, very in parentheses, it's not really important, but just to have fun. The cinematographic creation of image is frame after frame, right? And then your eyes put this together. Instead, the television creation is done through the techniques of blurring. Is a brush that goes continuously up and down in the screen, and it basically is one blurring after the other after the other. You don't see bam, 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 bam in the TV. In the TV, you say this kind of electronic brush makes that up and down, constantly. So in reality, it's a series of blurring one after the other. But that is very much between parentheses. So this image I use to interpret this thing. And here we are talking of a technique of superior level, okay? We are not talking of a Boolean or DNA, whatever. We are really talking of something really relevant. Okay, so we know that he does that, right? This is done in 1988. We saw this diagram, not diagram, this kind of process, let's say. We call it more processing frames, I would call it, because diagram is another thing. Here, 30 years, 20 years before. So we know that attitude. But let's see what he's saying here. Again, it works with an L shape. The L shape, there is reason to work with an L shape in terms of architecture, because it's a shape that gives a lot of strength, inside strength. In a way, it's dynamic in two directions and can be combined in many ways, so as an inner logic, an inner strength. So anyway, he works with this L shape, and what he does, he does not take one, he takes two, like the two domes there. You create two, you have much more possibilities. And when you do, it overlaps. And then, here's what happens. Those two guys start to swing exactly alike, like the cagnolino here with Obama and the lady. So they swing. They move one with the other. Why the hell do they swing? Why the hell do they swing? Somebody wants to answer? It is true, clearly. But, telling more beautifully, they are doing this in order to create those grids within which the game of the design will take place. The relationship of the swing are field of forces within which you can play the game of the design. Instead of having an outside mapping, layering things, in this case, the field of forces within which you play the game of the project are generating basically up from the inside, from the inside. So those create the field of forces, similarly to that, but in a completely different way, within which you do the design as a series of interrelationship between voids, pool, spaces, etc. And so these field of forces are creating through this process. Capito? Com'è la questione? All right. So, this movement happens in two directions simultaneously, ups and in plan, and up and in section at the same time. But really the right way to look is through that idea. You are creating the field of forces within which the design will take place. And you really don't know what the specific design will be. The same thing that when you do a grid on a place, you are not making a design. You are creating the precondition for a design to take place. You are not creating the actual design. You are creating the preconditions. Same thing here. This will create the possible preconditions of relationship in space on an architecture that is generating by the undulation blurring approach. So these diagrams here, they show basically what can be empty space. This is the absolutely crucial idea. What is the empty space and what is the solid space? But the empty and the solid are generating by the same system. So they are intimately interconnected. Exactly like that happens in the landscape, but this is another level, it's a more complex level. He doesn't have to invent maps, basically. He finds a way to auto-generate. So this house is called the Guardiola House. It is, you can have the book circulate. I gave it the book to some put it, move it, so the people can have it moving. So this house, exactly in my book, in my description of the work of Eichmann, are an absolutely crucial part. This house was with many others. Nobody really looked at it. Nobody really looked at it. Nobody really understood. Look at the literature. He played this key role, and from later on was, of course, recited, etc. Even Portuguese mentioned me because of this house. And he used everything upside down. What he said, yes, and then Peter Eichmann, the sergeant, speaks about that, but in reality put concrete cubes on the water. So, no, because everything can be put it upside down, no? But the relevance, talking historically, the relevance of a certain concept, you can say, Sergio said this about the Guardiola House, in reality he's putting concrete blocks there. That means it's not a high pass, because you will recognize, talking about the other guy, you recognize that the international contribution, then you can put it upside down. It's your case. But you cannot do the other game, because that is good. You know, it's a big difference. So, saying that, so this approach of this house played an important key role, although it was a little house, that was not even built, in the concept of the building. And imagine, since those books were very popular, in Italy, in that more that historical moment around the thing where this is good in new sense. I still remember this thing that after 3 or 4 years I went to a place in Piemonte, I don't know where, and some friends of me brought me to see an architect's house, an architect they designed as Guardiola, you know, as a little bit. So the Guardiola was kind of copies and news. I still remember the thing, you know. Of course, it was not particularly good. But those things had a little bit of impact, of course, because, you know, was an intellectual construction. You know, not just saying, okay? So it was explaining the thinking. So, this is the actual result. But it's not important, the actual result. It's like that you have a field of forces, and this is a one particular game of that particular game of forces. You may like it more or less in this particular interpretation. So in this particular interpretation, you see that this oscillation that you see here as a process, some became empty, some became void, some became element that cantilever in or cantilever out, guides the whole thing. And the approach is very difficult to express that to them, but for you, you understand, is that it's not a deconstructive approach in reality. Because the deconstructive approach is not self-generating, it is outside-generating. So there are languages that are bonbon. If you look at even the best and the others, are not inside-generating. Instead here, each one of these movements is not done because of any particular reason, but all are governed by the movement of the swinging of these two things. So there is no thing that don't apply on this. But you play, in a way, the different form depends on what you are interested to do. And this can be only one generating by exactly the same thing. Okay. At the same time, all this, if you read what Peter Eisner writes about that, he writes, philosophically, this is the Chora. I don't even remember what the Chora is. It's a kind of Greek stuff. I don't remember. And since the Chora is being and not being, and since this is on the, I think the sea arrives, it's on the sea, this situation of being and not being is incorporated there. So this is the kind of attitude, which is okay, but doesn't explain you anything. Right? It's a kind of intellectual construct. We were talking about François Roche, the same, no? It's that kind of idea that you can create in the best way an outside accreditation through whatever is outside to accredit your operation. But you don't explain the operation in reality. At the same time, you don't accredit the value of architecture because of inner reasoning, but in a way you do the opposite. So you that should be the champion, this is a very interesting point, you that you should be the champion of the autonomy of architecture, you always said this autonomy, you legitimize the architecture through politics, through linguistics and through things, so it's an incredible contradiction if you think 1 second. You are the champion of autonomy. Tell me how you operate. Tell me what is the sense, the profound sense of this operation. Don't legitimate you because Tony Negri wrote Autonomia Operaia 20 years ago. Hai capito? All right. So, because there are layers in this discussion, understand? I have to also to talk with them, with you. It's a complex. But anyway, you are not lost. You understand what I'm telling here. So, I start to use the word play, I start to use the word field of forces, I start to use the word chess, and we are approaching a little bit the way that we are operating, in the second part. So this is a real great intellectual essay on an architecture that uses dynamic as a generating force. And what is interesting, that this happened almost 70 years after Balla wrote the algorithm. Because Balla wrote the algorithm that makes that painting in 1910, more or less. 1 year more, 1 year less. This house is 1987, so it's around 70 years after. So it's interesting if you look at these things. The algorithm was there, but nobody has used it. Same thing that happened with several things in science, for example. Boolean math was a game. Nobody was interested in Boolean math until really the computers arrived. And they understood after 8 years that the strange binary logic that these scientists made it in the mid-19th century could be very important to have the machine operate. So it became a technological thing. But for 8 years was an intellectual thing, who cares? So it's the same thing a little bit with that. The other aspect that makes this, it is true, it is really true, that in a way this is contextual. It's contextual because it is true that idea of the swimming makes a sense when you are facing the sea. So I'm sure that they start to think in that direction with their study. I don't know the exact story, but I'm pretty sure that the idea of the ondulation of the sea and the philosophical thinking about that, in one way or the other, contributed to this idea. And the idea that the house is on a slope, you understand that this being in a slope here is completely different to the other one. And again, imagine this kind of situation on a sea makes a lot of sense. Although you will never approach directly, you never arrive to this result directly. You know, it's a kind of long path. I think that in this moment, the young Greg Lynn was the most important person at the Eichmann office. So, now many people don't consider Greg a designer anymore. I'm talking with people, he's becoming more an artist or another thing, it's just needs to be out. But the presence of this bright guy was important in this space, I'm sure. It was really important. Very young, he should be probably 23 or 24, within that environment, of course. He's Eichmann, but let's say the students, let's put it like that, because the idea is that one, that are strong, will contribute, of course, to an advancement of this idea. So it's clear that there is a role. Although I'm not 100% sure that he was in Guardiola, if I have to do a bet, I'm pretty sure that he was already in Guardiola. I never asked him, but I'm pretty sure. Very early after, he made another jump, which is this one. I think we can have a 15-minute break, okay? We have a short break, just 15 minutes, and then we go on, okay? Because this other part is very important too.